What's up, Ghoul Kids? Welcome back to another episode of the Ghoulish Gallery with your hosts, me, Tasha, and Journey. Each week, I have a guest from a different location here to tell us about their local spooks, haunted places, cryptids, urban legends, etc. And this week, we have writer Billy Loper from Mississippi, which is a state that we have not covered yet. So I'm super excited to get into this stuff. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. I want to get like a map or something where I can start coloring in like all the states where I've talked to somebody from, just to have like a visual representation. So in terms of spooky things, I feel like most people are split into two groups, and you've either consumed it constantly for as long as you've recognized what it was, or you're kind of a late bloomer to it. So do you fall into one of those groups, or are you in the middle somewhere?
So as far as like written horror fiction, I'm definitely have been reading horror my whole life. I read Stephen King way earlier than I should have, which I think is a pretty constant trend. Yeah. But mine was a little bit weirder because I didn't even know I was reading Stephen King when I first read it, because my first exposure to King was The Regulators. Ooh, which is the last Bachman book he wrote is Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
So I didn't know it, but I read that when I was around 11 or 12 years old, which is one of his psychic horror novels. And then my mom growing up, she was always a big horror fan. Yeah. So I grew up exposed to it, but didn't really get into watching horror movies until late high school, early college. And I really appreciate horror movies, but my preference in horror is more stuff like Hellraiser instead of stuff like Hereditary. I would rather the schlocky B-movie horror than stuff that is genuinely going to give me nightmares, because there's just something about it being on a screen that makes it way different.
Yeah.
And I've been playing horror video games my whole life, but that's kind of a whole different thing. You have a little bit more control there.
Yeah. I like to watch. I used to give my little sister a really hard time because she would be watching other people play games and stuff on YouTube. And I was like, what's the point of that? And now that I've seen some of the horror Let's Plays, I'm like, oh, well, I'm doing it now because they're playing games that I couldn't play without throwing my controller at the TV, freaking out. So I can watch, I can cover my eyes if I need to, like I'm good to go.
Yeah, and it's so different now than when I first started playing horror games, because one of the first horror games I played was Resident Evil 1 on the original PlayStation. But that game was scary then, but it jump scares just did not hit the same as they do in some of these like YouTube viral or like indie horror games, which so it's a whole different thing now.
Oh, it is. It's crazy. I think Outlast is one that I've watched. Some of the newer Resident Evils. Yeah, it's just, there's some where I'm just like, okay, look away. It's fine. It's not real. You're not playing. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've never been one to watch horror movies by myself. Mm-hmm. And my mom never would either. Like, she would always go see them with people, but it's hard because my wife, absolutely uninterested in horror movies. So I have to, like, I have a couple of friends, I'll have to find time to go see them with them.
That is my horror movie buddy. Her boyfriend is not a fan at all. He's like, I don't understand why you watch stuff that scares you.
Yeah.
I actually have finally gotten to the point where I can watch them on my own. Sometimes I regret that decision, but I can do it. And he picks like the worst moments, because I swear it's like he knows that the tension is building on TV. Like, and he'll be sound asleep, but all of a sudden he picks like the worst moment to just like lose his mind and start barking at something, and I like die of several heart attacks in a row. So he's like the best worst movie buddy that I've ever had. Now, You don't have to get like super specific in terms of what area you're from, like regionally in Mississippi, like where do you come from?
South Mississippi, which South Mississippi, which is to say not the Gulf Coast, because Mississippi kind of has three distinct regions. There's the coastal region, South Mississippi, and North Mississippi. So I'm from down around Hattiesburg, where the University of Southern Mississippi is. Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of like crypt, is it swampy down there? Excuse me, swampy down there at all? I know Louisiana
No,
icon.
so not really. The two big cryptids from where I'm from are I grew up real close to Louisiana, so the Rougarou, which is kind of like this Bigfoot swamp monster thing from Cajun folklore. And then it's technically not a cryptid, but Biloxi, there was an supposed alien abduction there in like the late 70s, early 80s. And the way that the two guys described the aliens, it's they sound more like the Jersey Devil in appearance than they do like a gray or anything like that. So those are kind of famous. Like you can find pictures and stuff of them online. But other than that, like you'll hear people talk about Bigfoot, but that's kind of a North America wide thing at this point, you know? And then for whatever reason, there was an outbreak of mange in coyotes in like
Chupacabra.
the Hattiesburg area. Yeah, people started talking about the chupacabra when I was in high school. But then we started like the game wardens were like finding them dead. They're like, these are just coyotes. But yeah, so
Always
it really
nice.
it's the Biloxi aliens that
Kind of the.
are real claim, I guess, to a cryptid. Yeah.
That makes sense. I know they've got like the skunk apes and all that good stuff when it comes to the more of the marshy areas.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure how much of that actually fell
Yeah, and
into.
North Mississippi probably has something going on up there that I don't know about, but that I haven't run into it. I had an archivist at USM that I knew who was obsessed with those Biloxi aliens, and USM, the Special Collections has the oral histories of those two guys. Who claimed that they were abducted. They took oral histories of them, so they have those stories. So that's kind of popular on campus at Ole Miss or USM.
That's awesome. Aliens are
Ole
my
Miss's cryptid is Faulkner.
jam. Shh, stop. What is your deal? Now, from what I remember, you do have a lot of ghosts.
Yeah, so I don't. The South in general, especially the Deep South, like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, have a lot of ghost stories for obvious reasons. You'll find Civil War ghost stories and all these sort of Civil War focused folk tales. Where I grew up, closer to my hometown, there's a place called Cooley Springs that's supposed to be full of ghost stories. But the ones that stuck out to me or have stuck out to me since I first heard about them are always ones that didn't happen around the Civil War because there's so much Civil War era stuff down here that the ones that kind of make no sense are the ones that I've always kind of latched on to. There's the ones that I, had told you I wanted to talk about today, which is Stuckey's Bridge up towards Meridian. But I recently took a trip to Oxford. Which is North Mississippi, decidedly North Mississippi, where William Faulkner's from. And there's supposedly all these crazy ghost stories about his house, Roanoke, but they're not even connected to Faulkner. They're ghost stories about the people who had it before him, that it is 100% stuff he just made up to scare people who were coming to his house. So it's like stories of women jumping off of the balconies because they were lovelorn and all this kind of stuff. So it's hilarious. Southern, my education is in history. I have an MA in history, specifically cultural history.
That's
So
awesome.
like that folk ways, sort of folk life, myth making process is just hilarious because it's always those kind of ghost stories come from places that just make absolutely no sense. But I have one ghost story, which is Stuckey's Bridge, that I can get more into. And then I have another, I guess, more of like just a paranormal kind of thing, that sounds like it could absolutely be the plot of a Stephen King novel.
Oh yeah. See, man, thinking about just like making up stories, I feel like being oddly enough the introvert that I am, that's like an excellent way to set up happenings for unwanted guests. Like those relatives that come stay and just won't leave. Be like, "Oh yeah, did you hear about, that ghost that I've got here that like is going to destroy all your stuff in the middle of the night while you're sleeping?" And but it happens. It's like, oh darn, I guess you should leave. Bye. Stop.
I don't know if that's what Faulkner was going for.
I totally would. Goals.
And who just wanted to irritate everybody who came to his house. So, which is, valid, but.
Right. Hang on, let me pause this real quick. It says my connection's unstable.
Uh-oh. Well, you're coming through fine.
Okay, now it's good. I don't know what that was.
Okay.
Okay, I can edit that out.
Ask Zoom.
Yeah, it's the last couple times that I've recorded, it picks a random time to disconnect from everything and kick me out. And then everything comes back up, and thankfully it saves the recording when it does that. So I don't lose everything. So yeah, whichever one you want to start with is fine.
Yeah, so I'll start with Stuckey's Bridge because it's a more traditional ghost story, or it's a very traditional ghost story. But so Stuckey's Bridge is this old bridge built in an area about 30 miles south of Meridian. It's close to a town called Enterprise, which is where my wife grew up, and then close to a place, I think it's called Savoy. There's a bunch of weird little towns that don't exist anymore up in that area. There's one called Bassett City, but it's a bridge that was originally built in 1850 over the Chunky River and then was rebuilt in about 1901 into a metal bridge, replacing like the wooden structure was there. And you can go to the bridge. It's a really popular hiking location. It's because the road is cut off and everything from it, and it's on private property, but it's also on the National Register of Historic Places. So the people who own the property have maintained the road that leads out to it. It's covered in gravel. If it hasn't rained, you can drive to it. If it has, you can walk pretty safely, which has made it really, really popular with like those schlocky ghost hunter people with like the night vision cameras, and they go out there. And for whatever reason, and I'll get into the story in just a second, but I first heard about this bridge before I ever met my wife. It was about 2008 or so. And I was in at that time I was in 8th grade in OA, and we watched, it was a Friday, and we watched some weird most haunted places in America, like video, in history class, and Stuckey's Bridge was on there. And it happened to line up, and this might be why the teacher chose this video to play, but I didn't think about that at the time. I was in the marching band, and the football game, the away game that we were going to, was Enterprise. So it was where this bridge was, and Enterprise is full of all these old metal bridges. So, of course, we all became convinced that one of the metal bridges that we were going by was Stuckey's Bridge, but it was a whole thing. But even since then, it's been featured on like National Geographic. There are Atlas Obscura and like haunted roadways articles about it. So it's in the middle of nowhere, but people will drive to this bridge because of the story that's associated with it, which is great because the story is so goofy. So, according to legend, a member of the Dalton gang named Stuckey owned a nearby inn where he would rob and murder his guests and bury his victims' bodies on the riverbank. Now, the Dalton gang is this legendary outlaw gang from like the Wild West, like Arizona and New Mexico and Nevada, the Nevada territories and stuff, who are this huge piece of Western folklore. That is who partially who the O'Driscolls from the Red Dead Redemption games are based on. So I don't know why a member of the Dalton gang supposedly ended up in the Enterprise, Mississippi in the late 1800s or early 1900s, and it's just one of them. Not, it's not like the Dalton gang ran a murder castle in Enterprise. It's such a weird myth, but it says that after murdering around 20-ish people, not five or six, 20, he was finally caught and hanged from the newly constructed bridge located near the site of his murders. And sort of since then, and basically immediately since then, there have been rumors of Stuckey haunting the bridge, as well as claimed sightings of an old man, supposedly Stuckey, although I don't know why an old man would have been a member of the Dalton gang, carrying a lantern along the river's edge, as well as loud splashing sounds that are supposed to resident or represent Stuckey's body hitting the water after they cut him from where they hung him. And then some people also say that they see like Stuckey's corpse still hanging from the bridge sometimes. It's such a interesting, I mean, it's such a perfect ghost story of like you have, you know, dead body hanging from the bridge or the loud sounds, and it's all this like perfect old just great ghost story. But then there's also all this stuff about why are the Dalton gang there? Why are, you know, what was going on with this inn where people were getting like 20 people got murdered before anybody in this town realized anything, which
Realized
is the one
it.
that especially doesn't make any sense to me because at present day, Enterprise has about 190 people in it. So for there to be a murder inn,
When 10% of your
everybody had to
population
know.
disappears.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, in the late 1850s, there might have been 150 people there. I mean, it's just great. And I love that it is like this rural version of the murder palace trope, like the guy who was in Chicago, who was supposed to be Jack the Ripper with the murder palace, because the sometimes you'll talk to people and they'll be like, oh yeah, he didn't like bust in on them in the room and cut their heads off. He would like poison the wine that he gave them, or skulk in the middle of the night and smother them with a pillow, or had elaborate traps set up. And it's like this progressively makes less sense the more that you're talking about it. And the even weirder is that this is 1900, and they would have built a parts of the myth when they people start trying to really explain it. They'll say that he was tried in a kangaroo court, as in like a bunch of people essentially lynched him, but a judge would have been in on it, where the judge would have ruled him for immediate execution instead of what would have at the time been the process of taking him to Quitman to the county court, where he would have been tried and hung by gallows. It's just so sometimes that kangaroo court aspect is thrown in there to explain why he is vengeful and like still haunting the bridge, which conveniently also helps explain why he was just randomly hung on this bridge in the middle of nowhere. And then sometimes, because of course every ghost story has to become overly complicated the more you add to it. Some people say that the bridge is also haunted by the bodies that are supposed to be buried next to it, which there's never been any human remains found around Stuckey's Bridge, which is weird because the Chunky, which is technically like the smallest type of river that you can get, is a really fast moving waterway,
All the
and there's
erosion.
horrible erosion from. Yeah, there's horrible erosion. Such the erosion is so bad that Enterprise, you know, for what the town is, has a crisis with its city graveyard where the river is eroding away the graveyard. Like
Oh
there might be some human remains soon, but that's further down river than where the bridge is. So there's never been human remains found, and also it if the guy had a murder palace and got away with it for 20 victims, why was he burying them next to a bridge? It's just
Right.
such a great sort of classic ghost story in the way that it makes absolutely no sense. And that's what I love. I'm in, these writing groups and stuff, and I write a lot of like thriller and horror stuff.
Oh.
And a lot of us would get to talking about ways to like ratchet down on our plots and make the logic as tight as possible. And then you have the actual real world ghost stories that would be inspiring what we're writing, where they just don't make any sense. They don't hold up past, any scrutiny of it making just the slightest bit of sense. And it's just the way that myths are built, where people, you could talk to 30 different people in Enterprise, which is about a third of the town's population, of course. But you talk to, these few different people, and each one of them will tell you a little bit of a different story. And I think the best thing about all this is that, and I, it's not like these are internet perpetuated ghost stories. They're much older than the internet, that obviously that it was like from the late 80s, early 90s. So like this is a ghost story that predates the internet, and people have been perpetuating it. But I'm almost starting to think that besides these like horror bloggers and articles that have come and been written about it, it's starting to lose a little bit of the mythology with teenagers in the area. Because the first time I went to Stuckey's Bridge was in around 2016, 2015, and then after years later. And since then,
Orange Journey.
teenagers have just taken to just spray painting graffiti all over the bridge, like
As teenagers
crudely drawn penis, than you are a ghost now
do.
if you go to Stuckey's Bridge. So it's just great. And it's so funny to like see the degradation of this myth, which is supposed to be this terrifying ghost story about the serial killer from the middle of nowhere. The teenagers just have no respect of it. And I'm sure they've heard it. Like I'm sure it gets taught about in classrooms there, or someone mentions it, but it's just so great that like people criticize Stephen King so much for his the characters in a lot of his books being like young kids and teenagers. And it's like, why are they doing all this? Because they don't care.
Yeah, they don't.
They're not terrified. Doesn't matter if there's a
No.
clown in the sewer. Let's go kill it. We're not afraid of this. So it's just such this great example myth of just plain weird ghost stories that the more you pile onto them, the less and less sense that they make.
That's one thing, like hearing so many of these stories, there are some times where I wish to I could just rewind things just far enough to hear what the original story was or see what actually happened, and then just watch the game of telephone take place over
So
centuries.
one thing that is sort of a standard of Southern myth making, and this might be true of Northern myth making, is I'm sure it is, especially up in New England. We love to say that such and such came or was here. So a non-ghost version of that is like Andrew Jackson slept underneath every magnolia tree between New Orleans and Tennessee. It's everyone. Andrew Jackson stopped here on his way to the Battle of New Orleans. But then, like, even these ghost stories have this because I'm sure at some point the story was just there was this guy named Stuckey, but somebody along the way added there was this guy named Stuckey. I think he was a member of the Dalton Gang. Because the Dalton Gang was just enormously popular in a way that even though we have all this internet virality stuff, we can't really understand. When you have like pulp writers writing about them and it's migrating, coast to coast, these stories of the Dalton Gang and Jesse James and that kind of thing. So, I mean, these people, that gang would have been famous enough for it to make sense for someone in Enterprise to have heard about them. It doesn't make any sense for them to have been there. But,
Yeah.
ghost stories wouldn't be any fun if they didn't make any sense. Or if they,
Yeah.
if they made sense, they wouldn't be any fun.
Right. And of course, the next person to hear
however
every edition just kind of repeats it like it's honest truth and they saw it themselves and just keep building on that story.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody loves to kind of add their own flair to these ghost stories. And when you think about how these stories get told most of the time, it makes sense because it's not like it's this cultural touchstone or this, you know, problematic story that has to be kind of reinterpreted. It's just a ghost story. So it, and especially this one, which in comparison to a lot of, you know, early 1900s, late 1800s ghost, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, sort of civil rights movement stuff. So this one kind of has the freedom to just be reinterpreted in however you want to, because it's just a ghost story. So it makes a lot of sense for this one to have gotten amped up over time, kind of around campfires or, you know, just where people are telling these stories.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's where like myth making's power is in its ability to just build on itself. And that's how you get stories like the really famous mini ball story, which isn't, I guess it's kind of a paranormal thing, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. There was this journalist named Tony Horowitz who passed away a few years ago. I don't remember if he passed away during the COVID pandemic or right before, but he had a book called Confederates in the Attic, where he went to every southern state or every state that would have been a member of the Confederacy and took down a myth from that area. And of course, Mississippi's is just goofy. It's called the mini ball pregnancy. Supposedly a man got shot through the groin with a mini ball rifle, and then it hit a woman in the groin and produced an immaculate birth. Yeah, so technically not a ghost story, but there's got to be some like magic going on there somewhere, right? So it's just these goofy.
That's just fantastic.
You when you're telling a myth, when you're telling a myth like this that is specifically meant to entertain, naturally people are going to try to amp it up to make theirs better than the last time they heard it. So it makes sense that Stucky is now from the Dalton gang, even though that absolutely would never hold up to scrutiny. Oh, and it also bears to note that, like, there's no records of this inn. There's no building left in town. There's no like murder records. It wasn't in the newspapers. So reality is there is a bridge out there, and the bridge is kind of creepy looking.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So, but you know, that does contrast really well with the second, like, not necessarily a ghost story, but kind of definitely a paranormal sort of myth situation, which I have to kind of be careful with, because it is the story of a Roma queen. And traditionally, a lot of the myth itself and a lot of the articles you see written about it are going to call her the Gypsy Queen. But those people, the Roma people, have kind of separated themselves from that gypsy word. So it can be kind of hard to find information about this without finding stuff from like 2011 when this was written. Mm-hmm. But supposedly, or not supposedly, the thing about this story is that about 99% of it can be verified as 100% fact.
Oh, wow. That's a good chunk.
So, yeah. So around 1915, Kelly Mitchell died in childbirth. And she was the queen of the Mitchell Romani clan, one of the largest clans of Roma families in the America at that time. And she died in Coatapa. I have no idea how to pronounce that, but it's Coatapa, Alabama, so it doesn't really matter. But she died in Coatapa, right across the state line. And Emil, her husband, she didn't die. She hemorrhaged during childbirth in Coatapa, Alabama. And Emil, her husband, and some of their family tried to find some local doctors. And some versions of the story Roma people in the area will tell you that the doctors refused to treat her because they were Romani. And then some will tell you that she died before they could get back with the doctors. But regardless of what happened, she died in 1915. And her family chose to have her buried in Meridian, Mississippi, and Rose Hill Cemetery, which at the time was the city cemetery that had the most open grave sites. Because there's older cemeteries in town, but most of them had filled up because Meridian's a really old town. And it's not that they had any connection to the city of Meridian. It's that was the closest major town in the area. And apparently her funeral was a huge affair where tens of thousands of Roma people assembled to see their queen off. But of course, this is 1915. This is pre the interstate highway system, which wouldn't be for another 45 years. Most of the roads in the American South and the Midwest were still dirt. You're still working with, you know, vehicles that have trouble driving more than about 15 miles at a time. And the Roma people mostly traveled by horse and cart anyway. So they had to freeze her body for almost 2 weeks to preserve it long enough for the Roma people to get there. And I think some versions of the story, which makes sense to me, say that that is another reason why Emil chose to have her buried in Meridian, is because that was the only major city in the area with a like a refrigerated morgue, which was really rare at the time. So they could preserve her body long enough to give these people long enough to get there. And because all these Roma people came in and Emil ended up remarrying one of them not too long after, a lot of Roma people ended up staying in Meridian. And there's still a pretty big like Roma population in Meridian. And today the grave has generated a just insane like amount of supernatural and spiritual significance. And you can find pictures of it online. And I have some that I'll share that people will come and pile Mardi Gras beads on top. They'll leave whatever they have in their pockets. Supposedly Kelly Mitchell's favorite drink was Crush Orange Soda, which is one of the earliest orange sodas that was ever produced. People will leave like unopened cans or bottles of Crush Orange, which is great to me because it probably tastes completely different than it did now. So she might be down there, you know, going, "Ah, God, why are you giving me this garbage?
What is this crap?" But,
right. So, but most visitors will leave offering at her grave and hoping for good luck in the coming year. The offering is supposedly supposed to like good luck for 12 months. That's supposedly how it works. But really, it's just this beautiful scene of visitation of her and her husband, Emil, who died, you know, many years later, is buried next to her. I don't know if her child died in childbirth as well. I can't find an answer to that. But if she didn't, if her daughter didn't, she died very soon after, because there is a child grave nearby as well, and people leave toys there. And this gravesite has at various points become a big thing of national attention. National Geographic did an article in 2012, and Atlas Obscura has an entry about it, and it's to the point where the city takes much better care of Rose Hill Cemetery than they might would otherwise, because no one can be, I think no one can be buried at Rose Hill anymore. I think it is full. And it's in a part of town that used to be kind of this industrial district. So it's kind of gone downhill. So this cemetery though gets taken care of really well, because it's a place of, I guess, tourism, for a lack of a better term, for the city of Meridian. Because not only is Kelly Mitchell and Emil Mitchell buried there, there's also a Confederate mass grave and a bunch of other things. However, the city, and this is the part of it, because that's a really interesting like paranormal story of this like grave site with immense sort of spiritual power and stuff. But the part that to me feels like a Stephen King novel, because I think Stephen King, I don't think Thinner is one of the Bachman novels, but Stephen King has this novel called Thinner where this guy almost hits a Roma sort of priest, right? And the guy curses him, and the guy like continually loses weight, right? So the city has a pretty shaky history with Roma spiritualism. The city calls itself the Queen City, like that is Meridian's thing. We are the Queen City. But up until 2011 to 2012, I can't get a real good answer about that. I think it was 2012. Fortune telling was banned in the city limits of Meridian. And by fortune telling, I mean basically all, quote unquote, psychic practices, which is a huge deal for Roman people because that's a very common, cultural practice for them.
Yeah.
And this sort of use but rejection of the culture of Roma people kind of creates this really weird culture around the gypsy grave, the gypsy grave sites, which is what, they call them at the graveyard and what is carved into the graves. But it's this really interesting, the Roma people versus the sort of old cultural grave site that the city of Meridian used for a while and sort of rejected the spiritualism. It sort of created this myth, and I don't know how pervasive this myth is, because if you look at the National Geographic article and you look at some other sort of Atlas Obscura stuff, nothing really mentions this, but some of the people I've talked to from the area mention it. The city of Meridian has struggled for a really long time, as for a plethora of reasons that is both, it's not necessarily the city of Meridian's fault. It's in a weird geographic area. The surrounding area has a lot of like cultural sort of income problems. There's not a lot of places to work in Meridian, but the city struggled for a long time. So a lot of people like to say, or used to like to say, that because they used Kelly Mitchell's memory, that the Roma people had cursed the city. So it's this weird sort of cultural touchstone of like really strange spiritual power or sort of spiritual site that has a really important spiritual power to the Roma people who live there and to other Roma people who will still come visit. And then it has this sort of weird interaction with the city and its tourism, and then, normal, like, so everyday Mississippians will go and visit. People come from all over, and there's this sort of normal tourism aspect to it, but then there's also this kind of internet tourism aspect to it with all these Atlas Obscura articles, where it's just this really fascinating piece of history that you absolutely wouldn't expect in Meridian, Mississippi. It's just this really fascinating paranormal, like, sort of spiritual story that is out of place in everything else that Meridian has going on, because Meridian was this like had a Civil War prison in it, and it's all these old homes, and this is the oldest carousel still functioning in America. And oh,
Oh,
also here's the grave of the Roma queen.
as a side note, here you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and I feel like too, that's definitely one of the cultures where there's more stigma and mythology attached to it than people who actually know things about it or make any attempt to really learn
Yeah.
overall. So that kind of adds
Yeah,
to
it's
the
interesting because
vibe.
there is this there's a historical sign out there, or a tourism sign that sort of explains who she was and what her cultural importance was to the Roma people. And there is this National Geographic article, and the I don't know what you call somebody that, I guess journalist, this journalist or this investigative journalist or cultural blogger or whatever that wrote this for National Geographic, did it. They went out and interviewed some Roma people, and they kind of tried to do more, but there's never really been like any cultural histories written on it, and nothing from like, histories on the city and Meridian that I've seen have really talked about it. So it's interesting. Like, it's a big deal, big enough that the city took a name from it, but not such a big deal that it has really become this sort of cultural milestone the way that some other stuff sort of in that sort of line between South and North Mississippi is. Because I mean, their Stuckey's Bridge definitely seems to have had a bigger pop culture imprint almost than the Roma than Kelly Mitchell's grave has, which is strange. Because I mean, Stuckey's Bridge is it's an interesting looking old bridge, but it's really not much to it when you get out there. Whereas this is like way there, it is a much more interesting thing to visit visually than Stuckey's
Yeah.
Bridge is.
And
Although I'm
more
sure
of
there are
a
some people who are really into bridges who would disagree.
and it's more of like a tangible story. Excuse me.
Yeah. The Kelly Mitchell story is real. I mean, besides the obviously ridiculous part about the whole curse thing that some people like to cook up to explain why the city of Meridian has an economic problem. But it's fascinating, and especially fascinating because there are still Mitchells who are descended from Kelly Mitchell that live there. There was one who was campaigning for making fortune telling, sort of psychic tourism things legal, which did happen. I think it happened in 2012. I didn't go pull the law. I know that when that National Geographic article was written, it wasn't. But I think it might have been like immediately after publishing or sometime between writing and publishing that it became legal. But so, I mean, it's been a decade now. But
That's so crazy because I feel like that's another one of those things. Like, I've driven coast to coast, or basically coast to coast, 4 times. And that's one of the things that you tend to see a lot of in the South when you're like, when you're driving on the interstate, but you're kind of looking off to the side roads. You know, you always get like the adult bookstores and you see these signs that pop up all the time for like psychic readings. And I do find it ironic with being in the Bible Belt that we see so much of that.
There's tons of it. A lot of your major cities, your major municipalities, have, some kind of ban on them for whatever reason. So Meridian wasn't unusual in that, although those laws have loosened a lot in the last decade. But Meridian wasn't unusual. It wasn't like they were the only city for miles or whatever that had a ban on them. It was just specifically, with Meridian's history, with the Kelly Mitchell grave and everything that made it strange. So it was a weird little period in the city's history, I guess, which was about 100 years. So, but I don't know for certain when the city of Meridian took the Queen City name. But I know it's been a long time. There's also this place in Meridian. This story is 100% untrue. But and now it doesn't even. I'm almost certain this ghost story will die. In the next couple of years, there's this building in Meridian for forever called the 3 Foot Building, and 3 foot, one word. It was some family's name, and they ran this big, it was essentially a skyscraper. It was the tallest building in Meridian, and it was like office space and everything. And it closed at some point before the 90s. I don't know if it closed in like the 60s or 70s, or if it was even earlier than that. But essentially, the building just fell into disrepair. It stayed in Meridian because it was historic, because they couldn't tear it down. But they had to like have a city block blocked off around it because it was like stuff would fall from it.
Oh,
Like
wow.
it was falling to pieces. So there was this myth. When I first met my wife, I would hear, because I never went to Meridian much prior to that, you would hear like, oh, yeah, the 3 Foot Building's haunted, and you'll see these. There'll be 3 lights on the top of it and such, and that's because of, there was never any reason for it. It just was an old spooky looking building. But over the pandemic, and especially the hotel opened this past year, one of the big hotel chains opened it, like bought it and restored it, and have made it the first 5-star hotel in the region.
Oh, wow.
So it now looks like now it's the best looking building in Meridian. So I'm sure those ghost stories will die because it's like there's not going to be any, like, it doesn't look like that anymore because it was this horrific looking, like, murder palace, terrifying looking place. And now it doesn't look like anything.
Looked more like something that would fit in with Stuckey's Bridge.
I mean, it was a very similar aesthetic. It was, old stone with like scars all over it, and like stuff had fallen and windows busted out up high, and and like the power's cut off to it, so why are the lights on sometimes? And
Yeah.
I don't know. It was one of those, which I am generally kind of a skeptical person, but that was one especially. Like, what are you like? Why is it haunted? This was office space. Did like some executive kill himself in his office? Like, I don't know, but there's lights on and power's off to it. It's really so. It was one that especially didn't make any sense.
Somebody that lived the miserable corporate life and now they're stuck filing papers for eternity. How's that for hell?
Filing papers for eternity and a card catalog because the building closed before computers. But yeah, there's Mississippi is so full of ghost stories like that. And yeah, I referenced Cooley Springs earlier, which is from closer to where I'm from. And there's no specific ghost story associated with it. It's just that, like, there are a bunch of old houses in Cooley Springs. So, with old houses, people died in their houses. So, it's like, oh, well, that house is haunted by. And those are very, like, very bog standard ghost stories, you know, like such and such died in their home and they have unfinished business. But everywhere has a ton of those. I thought Stuckey's Bridge was especially really interesting because it makes no sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there were a couple of other stories that, and I won't talk about any of these at length, but they came to me while we took a pause, that there are a ton of ghost stories in Mississippi that, like, if there are listeners from Mississippi, they might be like, well, why didn't you talk about Mount Helena or, you know, the Vicksburg Battlefield, which is supposedly super haunted. And there's so many Civil War stories in Mississippi. Like, most of the ghost stories, if you look up the top 10 most haunted places in Mississippi or whatever, which, you know, Visit Mississippi, all the tourism organizations run lists. Stuckey's Bridge is the only one on the, which always pops up for whatever reason. It has gotten all this media attention, but all the other ones are going to be plantation houses, Civil War battlefields, and obviously, I don't like talking about the plantation house ones for obvious reasons. But then, like the Civil War battlefield ones, it's like, well, every battlefield is haunted. If a thing is haunted because of the amount of suffering in it or whatever, every battlefield is haunted. You know, so those are boring to talk about. One I didn't think about, or two I didn't think about, which I'll just talk a little bit about because people are going to ask about them. One is Beauvoir, which is a big house museum thing down in Biloxi, run by the Sons of the Confederate Veterans. But it was this ancient house down in Biloxi that's built shockingly well to be from the 1800s, that has survived every major hurricane that's come through. And it was the last house of Confederate President Jefferson Davis, which is, you know, fine. And it's run as a museum related to the Civil War and Jefferson Davis by the SCV, but it runs ghost tours during October. I think Jefferson Davis died in the house, but I don't know. I've never gone to one of the ghost tours. I have a friend who goes just about every year. But they run not ghost tours as in, like, if you were to go to Natchez or Knoxville or Nashville, where they'll be like, and you know, this house is supposedly haunted by so and so. These people have gone all out with like the ghost hunters stuff, like
Oh dear.
scanning the radios and like, yeah. So that one necessarily to me isn't remarkable because of its ghost stories, which there's all these like supposedly a little girl died here. And I don't know that any of it's true or that any of these were actually ghost stories prior to this tourism drive for it. But it is fascinating to me that Jefferson Davis's house makes most of its money as a ghost hunters tour place, which is funny. The other one, though, is a little bit more interesting. It's also technically Civil War related, but not in that kind of way, is the Anderson Deason home in Ellisville, Mississippi. And they run ghost tours as well. They have a reason to, though. Are you familiar with the Free State of Jones story? They did a movie with Matthew McConaughey, 2016 or so.
I remember hearing of
So,
it, but I haven't like looked at
yeah,
it.
It's like a Civil War Western, although technically it can't be a Western if it's not like set across the Mississippi River. But Newt Knight was this guy who defected from the South during the Civil War because of disagreements with how the Confederate government was doing things. And Newt Knight ended up marrying a or entering into a common law marriage with an enslaved woman or a formerly enslaved woman. The reason I specify it like that is because he technically was already married. So he had two families. He never divorced his first wife, Selena, and they continued living. So he had two houses, two families, one with a white woman and one with a formerly enslaved woman. But what kickstarted all that and where his bad blood with the Confederacy came from is the family who originally owned Rachel, the woman he would end up marrying, were either the Andersons or the Deasons. I don't know which one it was. But he shot one of them in the house because the guy was supposedly, upset him in some kind of way. And that was the first of many murders that happened in the Anderson Deason house, which at first sounds kind of like bunk, but I think there are actually five or six murders on the record for the Anderson Deason house.
Oh, wow.
Like that, like, on like the actual police record of murders reported and prosecuted in the Anderson Deason house. I don't know what kind of like energy that place has going on, if it was buried, built on an Indian burial ground or what, but
Right.
there is some bad vibes in the Anderson Deason house. Yeah.
Sounds
So
like the
those are
makings
two that
for
like,
good found footage movie.
yeah, exactly. And they run like ghost tours, but it's privately owned and they don't treat it like a historical thing. Like they're putting speakers in the attic and stuff. It's like a more of a haunted house than like a sort of a New Orleans style ghost tour kind of thing. But and then Natchez is also super haunted with all that stuff. And there's supposedly this you can do a tour of the Natchez graveyard, and there's this statue that was built. It's an angel, and it was built in a very particular way where it looks like its eyes are following you, which seems like something out of a horror movie, but it's real and it works. Like it looks like the thing is following you in broad daylight, so that's uncomfortable.
Oh yeah,
But
that's super creepy. So do you get out and do a lot of these tours? Or have you done any at all?
I just realized most of my, if I'm going on a vacation somewhere, I'm gonna do it's telling me my internet connection's unstable now, so
Yeah,
hopefully
you cut out for a
it
minute.
doesn't give us a problem. So I do get out and do a lot of them. My background's in history, so if I'm going to go on vacation somewhere, I'm looking for museums and stuff. Like I've done the tours of Roanoke at William Faulkner's house. I haven't done a lot of the ghost tours because that's just really not how I want to spend my Halloween, is getting harassed by strangers with fake chainsaws.
All right.
So I've done the Anderson Deason tour, and I never did Beauvoir, but I have gone and done the cemetery tour in Natchez, but you can only do it during the day. I'm sure during October that they do some like graveyard tours at night, like lantern tours, but I've never done any of that. But I've worked a lot in public history and stuff. So I try and go to a lot of these little museums. Most of them have some kind of ghost stuff in them. Just happens to be. I mean, when you have anything that's, because America is such a young country, I guess, excuse me, anything that's more than like 50 years old, we're going to have some kind of ghost story attached to
Yeah,
it.
I talked to Lynns McLeod yesterday about Edinburgh, Scotland. So,
Oh wow.
her
Yeah.
fiance is from New York.
Older stuff there.
Yeah, and she's like, you know what? It's always so cute to hear someone to be like, "Oh, this is 50 years old," because we're like, "Oh, that's a drop
Yeah.
in the hat compared to everything over there."
Well, and it's interesting. I think in some interview with Stephen King, he talked about how, and it deteriorates faster. It'll be interesting to see if houses start getting ghost stories attached to them quicker. But then people don't really die in their homes as much as they used to.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a back and forth thing. Because apparently my grandparents' house is haunted because the guy that built it died in it. But it's like everybody's house is kind of like everybody's grandparents' house is kind of haunted that way.
Right.
So
There's always something
those are
there.
kind of the plain, everyone has those kind of ghost stories. But it's really interesting and something that I think your podcast has really shown. It's so interesting to see how pervasive all these stories are, because it doesn't really matter where you look. Everywhere has their unique ghost stories, but a lot of the pieces of them are very similar.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I've like to joke about a few times is like how many stories are related to women who like jumped off a cliff because you know
Oh yeah.
their fiance ended up being a
Oh, there's
con
so many.
artist or it's just
That's what a lot of the Faulkner one was. I can't remember exactly what it was now, but like somebody jumped off the balcony because she was lovelorn, and I'm like, I don't even know that you would die if you jumped off this balcony, because like it's not that, it's two stories up, but like she broke a leg and she, but there, have you spoken to anybody from Alabama yet?
I have, well, we're gonna be setting up our recording for that in the next couple of weeks, I think.
Okay, because
Thomas
there's this
Bloom.
waterfall, there's this waterfall in Alabama that the name of it I can't exactly remember, but there was this Indian princess who supposed to have jumped off of it, so supposedly she's supposed to haunt the basin of the waterfall. And there are so many stories like that, specifically of Native Americans. I don't know why, that people think Native American women like to jump off of waterfalls so much. But my hometown has a famous waterfall in it, which is rare for South Mississippi. And like a lot of times when people from other parts of the country hear someone from the deep South say waterfall, think of a much smaller thing than what this actually is. Like it's a substantial waterfall that is part of a riverway, so it never dries up. So it's a constantly running waterfall. They canoe, people canoe through there, and there are so many ghost stories associated with that place that are all just the same thing. And I started to talk about that, but so this waterfall has a deep pit underneath it. So if you jump off of the waterfall and you don't know what you're doing, it can suck you under the water and you'll drown. And tons of people have died like that. And of course, every person that dies like that supposedly haunts the waterfall all the way
Course.
back to, the Indian woman who, the Indian squaw who jumped off because she couldn't marry who she wanted to. There's so many stories like that. They're everywhere.
That's another one where I would love
I
to
mean, you could
know
write,
how many of those are like
why
accurate
are all these
because
women jumping off of
I
waterfalls?
know there is no man I'm gonna throw myself off a waterfall for. I'm just saying.
Right. I don't know. And why waterfalls? Like, I don't know what it is about waterfalls, but if there is a waterfall, there will be a myth of someone jumping off of a waterfall if it's tall enough.
Ain't that the truth? There's somebody who did it. They were just so miserable. It's like Romeo and Juliet played over and over and over and
Yeah,
over.
it's exactly. And it doesn't. And like sometimes it'll be two Native Americans, sometimes it'll be a Native American and a white man, or sometimes it'll be two people in the 50s, or it's just ridiculous. And sometimes they're so recent. Like you get into myths like that are 50s and 60s, like there are people alive who were there,
Yeah.
and it's wild.
Oh, yeah, it's been fun to see, like you said, the commonalities and the differences, and I just love getting into all the little side stuff. It just fascinates me
Yeah.
to see what everybody's got. So it's been a lot of fun doing this. So your cat scared the shit out of me earlier, by the way. All of a sudden there was just this head that I saw like the
Oh.
reflection of before
Yeah.
I saw him.
Oh,
Whew.
because the black windows, yeah, the dark windows. Yeah, and I have two cats and a dog in here somewhere, but the dog must be sleeping or he'd be over here.
That must be nice. Mine never sleeps when I want him to. He's very selective. The least convenient time is when we sleep.
Yeah.
All right. So you said you have, now, was it a novel that's coming out in May?
No, so I'm currently
Oh.
working on a manuscript for my first novel. Right now, undecided whether or not I'm going to pursue traditional publication or go self-publish with that. But I do have two short stories that are coming out. One will be coming out later this month called Father of the Pain That Lingers with a local literary journal, and one called The Anatomy of a Waterfall that will be coming out in May with the 2023 edition of The View from Woodall, which is a local arts magazine. And I
Oh.
also have a thriller short story that is almost flash fiction that won a local horror story writing competition that is up. You can read on my website. I just self-published it since it won that competition. And that story is never going to find a home in a literary journal. So I just self-published it.
I mean, it's awesome that
Because
that's something
it's
that's
not speculative.
like that's
Yeah, it's not speculative enough for like your genre journals like Apex Magazine or anything like that. And then it's not literary enough for a literary journal. So
That makes
I just
sense.
self-published it because it won a competition, so that was good enough for me.
Heck yeah, that's always a
But
good
then the
thing.
other two will be coming out in traditional presses.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's I before I've always been a bookworm, but before joining like the horror community on Twitter and the writing community in general, like I had no real grasp of how things function these days.
Yeah, it's
You
weird.
know, just I had like
It's weird.
that traditional publishing thing in my head, and when I started real, I was like, oh my gosh, like you can just like come up with your own, like that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that not to go off on a tangent right here at the end, but it's interesting to me that there is that perception kind of came up that you either have that people didn't self-publish stuff kind of before the Amazon revolution, because I'm currently working on building a library of the complete works of Stephen King. Just gonna take a long time,
Yes,
but I
it
was
will.
looking through. He has a bunch of stuff that is unpublished, and Stephen King was printing out. He was publishing, printing out his short stories, and like grocery stores and his high school in the 50s and 60s,
That's
which
awesome.
is just great because I mean that is it to me that just justifies if I write a short story and you kind of have genre magazines but they're more speculative and it's more like a story has to be closer to art to really get published in a magazine. If I write a schlocky thriller story that people like, I'm just going to self-publish it on my website at that point.
Yeah.
And then later on down the line, I can throw a collection together. But,
Yeah. No,
you
that's.
get that stuff out there is really, really the goal that a lot of people are just able to focus on now. And, there are more published writers than there have ever been in history. So.
And I love it. Like I have an all new appreciation for everything indie. One of my friends, like she's learned, she does all her own cover art and everything else. Like there's so much potential to learn and so many people who go to such awesome lengths to be able to do everything themselves and be self-sufficient. And I just think that's fantastic. Fantastic. All right, sir. Well, I will link all of your stuff. Like I said, I think this one will be mid-March-ish.
Okay.
So I will I'll give you a heads up before it's coming out so you have an idea of when to keep an eye out for it. And I appreciate you making
Okay.
time for this. It was fun.
Yeah, I had a great time.
I need to go
Thanks
look
for
up
having me
stuff
on.
on them now. I want to see all the Stucky Bridge stuff, all of it.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, you don't even have to like dig for it the way you might some ghost stories. If you just type in Stucky's Bridge, it's going to pull stuff up. And same thing with grave of Kelly Mitchell or the Roma Queen grave or anything like that, you'll pull it up.
Yeah, it's out there. Have to start digging into that stuff. Yeah, well, you enjoy the rest of your night, and we will we'll definitely be in touch.
Yeah, thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.